Okay, so let's get back to where we left off, and today's title is The Dream or the Dreamer. And as I said, I debated and I decided we'd move ahead with Joseph because Joseph is such a breath of fresh air to the people that we've been talking about. And so if you think about this, we had left off at chapter 34 or chapter 35. I am not going to read chapter 36. Chapter 36, if you take a peek at it, is Esau's descendants. There's a small brief passage in there that talks about a time when Esau and Jacob tried to live beside one another. This is found in verse 6 through verse 8. And eventually the brothers separated once again because they had so many possessions and so many livestock that the land couldn't settle them, and so Esau went to settle in the hill country where Edom became known as. That's the area where Edom was. And then the rest of the chapter is Esau's descendants and then the rulers of Edom. And then there takes this pause, and to be fair to the scripture here, we take a step back. Genesis 37 is not in chronological order. It actually goes back and picks up at Joseph at an earlier time of the story. As you're going to see, Jacob, it appears anyways, we don't know for sure, but it appears Jacob and all of his wives, I can't think of who they are right now, are living at the time. And so that's where we're going to pick up. So this is going to go back, and we're going to start picking up for Joseph. Joseph's story then runs from Genesis 37 through Genesis 50. It's a long story. There's a brief interruption for an incident in Judah's life, which we'll get to, unfortunately, next week. So one of the things that I want you to remember is that this story shouldn't be focusing on Joseph. Joseph is not the firstborn. That's Reuben. But as we talked about last time I spoke, Joseph assumes the duties and responsibilities of the firstborn because of what Reuben did with his father's wives. The other thing that I want to point out, and I'm going to point out some examples of this, many people argue that Joseph is the first type of Christ that we see in the Old Testament, that Joseph's life is a foretelling or a foreshadowing and mimics the life of Jesus. Other than the chapter that we're going to talk about today, there is nothing negative said about Joseph in the Old Testament, which is pretty impressive when you've seen all the other examples. But the closest we get to negativity towards Joseph is his immaturity and his lack of discernment in today's chapter. But it is an impressive man's story compared to the others that we've gotten so far. So let's jump into it. Genesis 37, verse 1. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is an account of Jacob's family line. So again, you get to see this is a kind of precursor to that we're going back. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the son of Bilhad and the son of Zilpha, his father's wives. And he brought his father a bad report about them. Now Israel, his new name, loved Joseph more than his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. He made an ornate robe for him. His brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, and they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, and suddenly my sheave rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule over us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told this to his brothers. "Listen, I had another dream. This time the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you have? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. By the way, that line about his father kept this matter in mind, should remind you of Mary, right? Mary pondered all of these things in her heart. Okay, now, if we go back to the beginning of the story, we are introduced to Joseph at the age of 17. He is 17 years old, and he is out tending the flocks with Dan, if you can go back, don't I have Genesis 30? Yep, thank you. So he's out there tending the flocks with what? The children of two wives, actually the handmaids or the maids, and that is Zilphar and Bilhad. And so we know that he is out tending the sheep with who? The sheep. Let's go to the loud pro. Dan and Naphtali and Gad and Asher. He's out there with those four. I don't know how they got selected. Were they just, this is a time for the maids' wives, the children to go out? I don't know. But Joseph is out there, and maybe, by the way, it appears in this story that Joseph, or that Benjamin is not yet born. There's no mention of Benjamin. There's no mention of a number of other brothers. But many people believe that Benjamin had not been born when this story was told, although he could have been born and just very young. Who knows? But we know that Joseph is out with these four guys right here tending sheep. He comes back to his father, and he gives a bad report. I don't know what these four guys were doing out there. Were they throwing things at the sheep? Were they, I don't know, sleeping too long in the morning? Were they setting things on fire? I don't know what they were doing, but they were doing something that Joseph came home and tattled on them. We don't know what Jacob said when he heard this bad report from Joseph about his brothers, but my guess is he believed Joseph and not his brothers. It's not a good beginning of the story, although if you've ever had children or if you've ever been a child, you know that these things happen in families, right? Tattling and telling and things that go wrong. It's the course of childhood, although they're 17 and older than that. And so then we get, the Bible tells us a little snippet here to help us understand this mess. Not that we didn't know this. And it says this: Now Isaac loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. But the Bible doesn't tell us here. He was born to his favorite wife. He was born to Rachel. He made him an ornate robe for him, and when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Now you all, when you were growing up, you heard this was the coat of many colors. It could have been. What is an ornate robe, and what was so special about Joseph's robe? Joseph had to stand out like a sore thumb among his brothers. Because at this day, you wore robes. Robes were your outer garment. They were like your clothes, like our clothing, outer clothing that we wear. But the average robe was to your knees. It was short sleeve, and it was usually brown and drab. Particularly if you were a working man. So if you had a blue-collar job, that's the way your robe looked like. If you were royalty or you were a supervisor, you got to wear the robe that Joseph, his dad, gave him. His dad gave him the supervisor robe. Why? This robe was not... Yes. So here's a great question that Steve asked. When did he give him this robe? Was it before or after the dreams? It appears to be before, but man, that's a great question, isn't it? Because if he gave it to him after the dreams, he had reason to give him this robe, right? Here's what Joseph's robe looked like, you all. It came down to his ankles. It was long-sleeved. And it was a bright color. Can you imagine the 12 brothers coming out? Robe after robe after robe. And here comes Joseph in this bright color, long robe that was long sleeved down to his ankles. And his brothers were in brown or drab, short sleeve and to their knees. We got to know who was what. Who was the worker and who was the supervisor. But think about the parallel that Steve talked about to these dreams. It all confuses me and makes me frustrated. But do you understand why his brothers hated him? You had to see this every day. Back in Europe, when you went to school, when you were a scholarship student, you also got to wear robes that had long sleeves. I forget which one. I think the non-scholarship people had robes that had short sleeves, and the scholarship ones had long sleeves, so that everybody could tell whether you had a scholarship or not. This is kind of the same thing. We all know that the brother loves, our father loves him more. Now, and also, this also makes this whole thing where he comes back and tells on his brothers even more like, like he's acting like a supervisor. He's acting like he's not the one that has to do hard work. The other thing to remember that you used your robe to do about everything. You, when you traveled, it became your suitcase. You would wrap your belongings into it. When you had a baby, you wrapped your baby in it. You spread it out when you had a picnic to sit on it. You even gave it to other people as security for a loan, which is why the New Testament talks about those things later on. This was a multi-purpose robe. So it's not a small thing that his dad gave him. We've talked about this before. Yes, there will be favorites in families, but parents should use wisdom when it comes to their favorite children and should not be giving them robes of many colors. Let's not make it that obvious. Now, his brothers could not speak a kind word to him or about him. What a mess. This family is a mess. But the other thing to keep remembering, just because you come from a messy family doesn't mean you're going to be a messy person or that God can't use you. Because watch what's going to happen in this case. Now, you all, Joseph has the tact of a snail, or I don't know what, a raging dog, I don't know. His brother, he knows his brothers hate him. He knows that his father loves him, and he has this dream. I'm going to be honest. I hope at 17, although at 17 I probably wouldn't have. At 17 I hoped, by the way, my brothers and sisters, I wasn't going to say this, but it just crossed my mind. My brothers and sisters, my nickname when I was growing up was Joseph because they said I was the favorite son and that the only thing I missed was a coat of many colors. So that was my nickname growing up. So I do know what it's like to have your brothers and sisters think that you are Joseph. So maybe I wouldn't have had any more sense here than Joseph did. But Joseph is what? He has this dream. Now, maybe he didn't understand what it meant. His brother certainly did. But what have you had? I don't know. What have you told your brothers this dream, or would you have kept it to yourself? So he has this dream. He's out in the field, and they're all gathering the sheaves of grain. And all of a sudden, his sheave stands up, and the brothers bow down. I don't know how you interpret dreams. I hope you'd interpret all your dreams, because some of them are just crazy. When I was back at Messiah, I was doing some research, me and another professor. He grew up in Africa, and so he convinced me that we should ask students about dreams. And one of the questions he said we should ask students is, are you responsible for the sins you commit in your dream? And I said, come on. Nobody's going to say yes to that. And wow, yes, people say yes to that. About 30% of the students said that they are responsible for the sins that they commit in their dreams. That was bad for me. I mean, I feel guilty enough for the sins I commit in real life, much less the ones that I commit when I don't even have any control over it at night. It doesn't seem fair. So I don't know how you interpret dreams, but certainly the brothers got the interpretation, didn't they? Here's what they said. Do you intend to reign over us? Verse 8. Will you actually rule over us? They hated him all the more because of the dream and what he had said. He is not making friends with his brothers. Here's the thing to remember. Does this dream come true? Absolutely 100% yes. It's not going to be too long. A few years, well, 20, 30 years. His brothers will be bowing down for him and they won't even know it. But it's not that this dream doesn't come true. It comes true. But should have he told his brothers now? Then, to make matters worse, he has another dream. This one's even worse. And of course, he couldn't. He would have thought, my brothers did not like that last dream. This time, I certainly won't tell them this dream because this one is even worse. And so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. But nope, Joseph just plows ahead and tells the dream. This one, he's out there, and I don't know if he's a star. It doesn't actually say what he is in this dream. But he has this dream, and all of a sudden, the sun and the moon, and 11 stars bow down to him. I wonder what that could mean. Well, everybody else seemed to know. That's mom and dad and our 11 brothers. Can you imagine these poor guys? They already got to look at this ornate coat every day. And now they got this guy dreaming about this kind of craziness. Even Jacob has too much at this point. And he says to Joseph when Jacob... I wonder if Joseph told Jacob the first dream. We don't know. This one we know that he eventually goes and tells his dad the dream. And his dad rebukes him. Joseph, that's enough. It must have been bad for Jacob to rebuke Joseph. But it is pretty bad. And he does say to him, will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down before you? Again, the dream comes true. And again, I like it that it says, and his father kept the matters in his heart, even though his brothers were jealous of him. A couple points I want to make here. Number one, God told Joseph what was going to happen way before it did. But you know what God left out of that dream, both of those dreams? Slavery, time in prison, other really bad things. Sometimes God gives us a hint about what's going to happen in our future, but he doesn't give us all the details. I don't know what that dream would have looked like had God went to Joseph and said, hey, this is all the things that are going to happen. Yes, you're going to be a ruler someday and you're going to rule over your brothers. But he doesn't tell him all that. He just gives him the end point without all the pain in between. Sometimes God gives us where we're going to be without all the pain. Should he? Maybe. But like the Bible says that Jesus learned through suffering, so Joseph is going to learn through suffering. But God doesn't give him a glimpse of that here. The other thing that I want to point out is something that we're going to find in James 4, verses 1 to 3. It's a great little passage. What causes fighting and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, so you will not have, so you will kill. You covet, but you can't get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive, because you ask with wrong motives, so that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. What James here seems to be saying is that many times we have fights with one another. Why? Because we are jealous and covet. Our desires take us away, and we become and have conflicts with other people around us. This passage, this where I ended up, says that his brothers were jealous of him. Jealousy is a hard emotion. If you call jealousy emotion, it's hard to know what it exactly is. But jealousy causes us to do many things that lead to fighting among us. When you think about the New Testament, Twyla was just mentioning this the other day, much of it is spent on what? Telling us to love one another. It's so hard. Because of why? What James is talking about here. Our jealousies and our desires and our sense of unfairness causes us to fight and to have conflict with others. You all, Joseph didn't help himself here. He did things that resulted in the further hatred of him by his brothers. Paul Tripp, who has become really famous, who I don't even know what I'd call Paul. Paul does counseling on an informal level. He's also a minister. Paul Tripp says this, we are the biggest danger to ourselves. What Paul Tripp argues in his book is that lots of times the reason we don't get along with other people is because of the way we conduct ourselves. Not always, obviously, but many times that's true. Jealousy is best dealt with at the beginning rather than the end. We're going to find out that jealousy leads to what? Remember it says here, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. Most of the time we don't kill when we get jealous. Probably none of us have killed somebody yet. I hope that's true. I would assume 99.9% chance that that is true. We don't kill people physically, but we kill them emotionally and we kill them relationally when we can't get from them what we want sometimes. Now, life goes on for these brothers. And so we go back to the point. We'll jump ahead now, go back to verse 12. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, of all places, the place we just came out of with Dinah, near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I will send you to them." "Very well," Joseph replied. He said to him, that is Isaac, Israel said to Joseph, "Go and see that all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring back word to me." He sent him off to the valley of Hebron. Okay, you all. Why did either one of these people agree to this task? You got this supervisor robe on. You had these crazy dreams. Your brothers hate you. They can't say anything good about you. And your dad says to you, "Hey, could you go check up on your brothers?" Tells you one thing. Who's been out in the fields doing the hard work and who's been at home with dad doing who knows what? Joseph, the supervisor. The other 11 brothers who are workers are out there. And dad says, "Hey, why don't you go check on them? Have some wisdom, Jacob," or Isaac, or sorry, Israel here. That's not the son you want to go out there and give report on what your sons are doing. Joseph willingly goes. I don't know what was wrong with him either in this point. But he goes. And I love this next verse. It's one of my favorite. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and said, "What are you looking for?" How many times did this happen? You have no idea where your brothers are. You go walking and you wandering the field looking. I think this happened all the time. We just get record of it now. He's wandering, looking, can't find anybody. Somebody finds him and says, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks?" And the guy says to him, "What?" "They moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" By the way, that's 10 to 15 miles away from Shechem. So Joseph hightails it over to Dothan. So Joseph went with his brothers and found them near Dothan. And they saw him in a distance. And before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. And this time their jealousy goes to the length that they actually decide that they are going to kill their brother because they're jealous of him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we will see what comes of his dreams." So they have this. They hatch this idea. Okay, here he comes. This is our chance to get rid of him. This is our chance to get rid of the supervisor. This is our chance to get rid of the favored brother of our father. So let's take him, throw him into a cistern. After we kill him, we'll kill him and we'll dispose of his body in a cistern. And then we'll go back and tell our dad that a ferocious animal ate him, or tore him apart at least. And I love the last line. "Then we will see what comes of his dreams." What his brothers don't know is that this time they are threatening to what? Thwart God's plan for the salvation of their family. Because they don't know what God has in store. They don't know why God is going to send Joseph to Egypt. And they say, "Hey, we got to kill this guy so that he can't rule over us." But as we're going to see, God makes sure that his plan comes true, even in the hands of the very people who were trying to thwart his plans unknowingly to them. God's plan continues to come through and continues to be held steady despite the attempts of the brothers in this case. Verse 21. I will say this before I read verse 21. It's nice that we are not always just known by our worst deed that we ever do, because we get to see Reuben try to do something really good. When Reuben, the oldest son, the one who slept with his father's wife, when Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the wilderness and don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So Reuben said, oh, no, I don't want to kill all this. I don't know if he thought, man, our dad really loves Joseph. This is going to break my dad's heart. I can't do this. Or he really liked Joseph a little bit better than the rest. But he says, let's not do this. Let's just throw him in the cistern. And then he was hoping, I think Reuben was hoping to secretly go back, rescue Joseph and take Joseph back to his brothers. Or take him back to his dad. Now, so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe that he was wearing, and they took him and they threw him into a cistern. The cistern was empty and it had no water in it, and they sat down to eat their meal. So Joseph shows up. They grab him. They strip him of his ornate robe. They throw him into the pit or the cistern that had no water in it, and then they sit down and eat a meal. They decided, I guess, let's eat before we kill. So they threw him in the cistern. And again, Reuben had said, let's just put him in the pit and don't kill him. And so I'm assuming they're still having discussion about what they're doing based on what happens after this. I read somebody when I was preparing for this passage who said, and I don't know if this is really true. They said to be able to not hear the screams of another person, you have to go 25 yards. That doesn't seem very far to me. I think you'd have to go longer than 25 yards not to hear a scream of somebody else. It seems like you'd have to, I don't know. Twyla and I never tried it. I should have had you scream and see how far you'd have to go. But don't you think you have to go further than 25 yards to hear somebody scream? Maybe, that's true. That's true. I did wonder, maybe because you're in the underground that the dirt absorbs the sound a little bit. That's probably true. Because they said that they've done tests. I don't know. The one guy I read said this. They probably had to move their table 25 yards away from him so they didn't have to hear him screaming while they were eating. But it took them 25 years to get the screaming out of their hearts, even though it only took 25 yards to get it out of their ears. Which is really kind of interesting and true. I don't know how much you dislike somebody to eat a meal while the guy is screaming or yelling. And maybe Joseph didn't say anything. I wondered, what did Joseph think when he was in the cistern? Maybe he just sat there. Did he say, hey, I'll be better. I won't tell you any more dreams. I'll be humble. I'll give you my robe. I don't know. What's that conversation like? By the way, foretelling of Christ's life, who also was stripped of their outer clothing and left to die, Jesus on the cross. The foretelling of Jesus' coming death. So they're sitting there eating, and God springs into action. He already sprung into action, but God's plan springs into action. The cistern was empty, there was no water in it, so they sat down and they ate, and they looked up and they saw a caravan, of Ishmaelites, the lovely Ishmaelites. They come back into the scene. So here we have Abraham's other sons. His descendants are coming across. They're caravanning across. And the camels were loaded with what? Spices, balm, and myrrh. Myrrh. Huh. Now that was pretty common, so we're not going to make too much of that. And they were on their way to Egypt. Judah is the brother who is the what? Jesus' forefather, the Lion of Judah. Judah says to his brothers, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? He says, come on, what are we going to really gain if we pretend that we didn't kill him and we kill him? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, not lay a hand on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. His brothers agreed. So when the Midianites merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. Now, I don't know what your brother's worth. How much would you sell your brother for? Sometimes probably not even 20 shekels of silver, but his brothers decided, I don't know how they negotiated the price. I hope that was the going price of slaves back then. What I think his brothers were hoping for or thought would happen was that Joseph would die en route to Egypt as a slave. We'll get rid of him. He'll die. We won't have to kill him. But we don't know what they were thinking. We do know this. The trip that he took was 30 days across the desert. He would have, and I'll read a psalm at the end of today that supports this. He would have probably been shackled. He would have probably had ankle shackles around his ankles. And he probably had a chain around his neck or a ring around his neck. He would have likely had to walk that 30-day journey behind the camels. And would have been treated much more like, what, luggage or some kind of merchandise than he would a person. Once he got to Egypt, he would have been sold, again, like a piece of merchandise. So they take him, and all of a sudden, what, in verse 29? Reuben comes back to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there. He tore his clothes. Why did he tear his clothes? Because he thought, what happened to my plan? Where is my brother? He went back to his brothers and said, the boy isn't there. Where can I turn now? Reuben continues to feel the sense of guilt because he keeps saying to himself, appears anyways, I can't be responsible for this, my brother's death. I can't be the one who kills my brother. And he's saying to what his brothers here, what have you done? Where am I going to go? Again, we see the goodness of Reuben here. We're all very complex people with a mixture of good and bad. Interestingly enough, he doesn't seem to care about Joseph here. He cares more about himself. But we'll let that be because that's who we all are. In times of concern, we tend to care more about ourselves than we do others. Then they got Joseph's robe, verse 31. They slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. They took the ornate robe back to their father and said, I love the innocence here, we found this, examine it to see whether it is your son's robe. Okay, come on now. We all know that it was his son's robe. How many other robes are going to be like this? Maybe there was another royal person. They didn't have DNA testing to decide whether it really was. He recognized it and said what? It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. Then Jacob changed his clothes, put on sackcloth. In today's language, he'd be put on black. And he mourned his son for many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, he said, I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave. So his father wept for him. We don't know how long Jacob mourned, or Israel mourned for his son Joseph. It was a long time. He wasn't comforted by his other sons. He wasn't comforted by his daughters. And he vowed, I will never stop mourning until I die. By the way, what do his brothers worry about eventually when Joseph asked them to bring Benjamin to see him? We can't do that. That will break our father's heart. I'm getting way ahead of myself, but you all, Judah, the one who came up with the plan to sell him to the Ishmaelites, was the one who what? Stood up for Benjamin. Judah grows the most of any of the brothers, at least the stories we get to hear, over the time of Joseph's life. Even though next week he's going to have a terrible, terrible mishap. Last verse of this passage. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. We get this little snippet that says, okay, while Jacob is back here, Israel is back here mourning, his son Joseph is now in the hands of Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's captains of the guard. That's going to become very important. Now, what can we take from this story? Number one, God's plan will continue to be worked out regardless of what happens around us. See, go to that Psalms passage that I have here. Look at this, you all. Here's God's plan. He didn't reveal it to everybody. He didn't say this, but the dreams point to it. This is Psalms 105, verse 16. He called down a famine on the land and destroyed all the food supply. He sent a man before them. Joseph sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with shackles. They put irons. His neck was put in irons. What he foretold came to pass till the word of the Lord proved him true. I love this psalm because in three little verses here, it sums up God's plan. God's plan was what? We'll sacrifice one of the brothers for the salvation of you all. Doesn't that sound like Jesus? God said, we're going to use Joseph to save all of you. But he's going to have to be sacrificed. He's going to have to suffer. He's going to have to what? Be bruised so that my plan can be enacted and can worked out and the salvation can be brought to Israel. Jesus does the same thing. Joseph does it first. Now, God's plan will come true regardless of what we do to try to mess it up. Number two, we don't always get to see how God's plan is going to end at any given moment. Many times, all we're left with is a bruised neck and bruised ankles. And we're wondering, where in the world are you, God? I get it. That's the way I often feel. God, where are you? Why are my ankles and my neck hurting? And where is your plan? It's hard to break out of these ankles and neck braces. Number three, regardless of where you come from, God can use you. Your family might be a disaster. Your life might be a disaster. You might be a disaster. But God can use you if God chooses to include you in that part of his plan. But wow, in the midst of our pain, even like Joseph, when you're foretold that you're going to what? Your brothers are going to bow down to you. I can't imagine on his journey across the desert that Joseph couldn't help but think, how in the world is that dream going to come true? Did I just have too many chicken enchiladas last night? Is that why I had that dream, or was that from God? He must have thought that couldn't have been from God, because that certainly is not going to come true. And yet it did. Wow. It's hard to hang on to that, though, in the midst of the pain that we have. Pain can teach us many things. It can make us bitter, but it can make us better. Let's pray. Father, we do thank you that you sent Joseph before the children of Israel, the children of Jacob, in order that you may rescue them from the famine that they receive. Father, we thank you too that you brought Jesus into our lives to save us from a spiritual famine so that we too can be saved through the work of one man. Father, thank you that your plan goes forth before us. Father, help us to be willing participants in your plan. Help us to continue to be active in that, even when our necks hurt and our ankles hurt, Father. Thank you that you will be with us during those times and during those times of pain. In your name, amen.